Promenade across the floor, sashay right on out the door, and into the glade, and everybody promenade.
You're tuned to the Square Dance Radio Network. Today is Wednesday, November 9th, 2011.
And you're listening to the Do-Si-Do Show, episode number 24.
Hi, I'm your host, Dale Hodge from Columbia, Maryland.
And I'm Barb Jarvis from Wheeling, Illinois. Hello, Square Dance community. Hello, Dale. Today we have the first part of our interview with caller Tom Miller from Pennsylvania.
Yeah, Tommy's somebody that I think he was the second caller that I ever met. A lot of time under his tutelage, didn't realize at the time that he'd only been called in about 5 years.
Wow. So. I don't know Tom.
No, you'll get to know him here. He's a lot of fun. Oh, before we get into the interview, Barb, what did you do this past weekend?
You're not going to believe it. I almost don't want to bring it up. Do you want to guess?
Sure, you did laundry.
I did. Isn't that exciting?
It is. It's the most exciting thing that I hear that you do on a regular basis.
Yeah, I should. It's more fun to let it all pile up, quite literally, though. Yeah, that was Saturday, and then Sunday I spent with my mom and some friends. Yes, I bet you had a more exciting time this weekend, Dale. What did you do?
Well, exciting. Friday evening, Kathy and I went down and got together with some friends, and they have what they call a First Friday get-together. Kathy and I also went to Annapolis and saw the Navy football team.
Mm.
That was very exciting. There is a lot of pageantry around Navy football games, including all of the midshipmen marching in. On Sunday, I drove to New Jersey, called a C1 and A2 dance, and drove back home and got home Monday morning at 3:30.
Whew, that's a big weekend.
It's a big weekend, and I am getting too old for this stuff. You're only as old as you feel, and Monday morning I felt about 95. Anybody you'd like to say hello to today, Barb?
Yes, I have a couple of shout-outs, actually. One is to my sister Carol, who's been under the weather with mononucleosis, which explains why she's been tired all week. Hi to Carol. And also, hi to my friends at Chi-Town Squares that were mourning the loss of one of our members, Ken Jancy. So a special shout out to his life partner, Bob. And also, hi to Theron, who said something to me at a recent dance about the Square Dance Radio Network. So I wanted to say hi to Theron. And how about you, Dale?
Just want to say best wishes to a friend of mine, another caller that's in the hospital with back problems. Today we have the first part of our interview with Tom Miller.
Yeah, I don't think, if I've danced to him, it's been at a national convention and just for one little 15-minute segment or 30 minutes or whatever. I don't have a clear picture of him in my head or his calling prowess. And I'm sure you know him because you mentioned that.
I grew up in my square dance, dancing and calling about 30 minutes from him. I've talked to him and seen him, I don't know, once or twice a year for the past 30 years or so.
Forever.
My experience of Tom is that he is one of the great gentlemen and very fun-loving, always has a joke to tell you, can always make you smile.
That, what you mentioned, it seems to be an important part of the Square Dance caller persona.
Mm-hmm.
So many of you guys are like that, very personable, very friendly, can always tell a joke or make people laugh.
So this is the first part of our interview with Tom Miller. Let's get him on the line.
Hello.
Hey, Tom Miller.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. I got Barb Jarvis here on the line with me.
Hey, Barb.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm okay. It's earlier where I live than where you guys live, but I think I can handle it this morning.
Yeah, well, you people in the central part of the state are just wusses anyway, so.
We're confused.
That's okay.
The conversation you're hearing is being recorded and will be aired. Please continue.
sure, yeah.
Retraction.
Any other parts of the country you'd like to alienate before we start?
Yeah, let's talk about D.C.
Okay, well, that's not part of the country. So it all works out fine.
That's what the problem is.
Good one.
You and Eleanor Holmes Norton. Let's go ahead and get started. We'd like to provide a little bit of background, where you're from and whatnot. So where are you originally from?
I was born and raised in a little town called Loretto, Pennsylvania, which is about 2 hours east of Pittsburgh. And I am still located almost in the same area. I live about 3 miles from my the place that I grew up at.
And you said that's east of Pittsburgh?
East of Pittsburgh.
You do a lot of calling down in Pittsburgh?
On occasion. So I'm there about 3 or 4 times a year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I live right on top of the mountain range. I can drop in Altoona, 13 miles is the big city, or go into Johnstown, which is about 32 miles south of me.
Have you had other jobs or a square dance calling your entire career?
No, actually, square dance calling has been my career right out of high school. Been full-time since 1976.
Wow.
Now, I have had work for my brothers and their business, and I help with a local funeral home, just a hands-on type thing, you know, delivering flowers or helping them in church or anything like that when they need me. That's basically just my fun time to pass time away during the day when I'm out calling square dances. A lot of people don't know that, but they will now, I guess.
Tell us a little bit about your family. You've got 2 daughters?
I got 2 girls. My oldest is 17. That's Candace. And my youngest is 14, and her name is Lindsay. They both square dance. They are square dancers. They love to square dance. Neither one of them has had any class whatsoever.
Hmm.
My oldest can tinker a little bit with C1. She's comfortable dancing at A2. And my youngest dances through plus, tinkering a little bit with advanced.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, you know, with teenagers, they're like sponges. They seem to saturate more than people that are older, but they definitely enjoy square dancing without a doubt.
Great. Have either of them ever called or indicated they'd be interested in calling?
No. Candace, my oldest, likes the choreographic side of it. She is always throwing stuff out there, choreographic, and believe it or not, I have taken some of that to the microphone, believe it or not, but it's been kind of neat just watching her grow with the square dancing. And of course now they're at the age that school's important, and she's a senior and she wants to go to the Air Force, so she has her goal set on other things, but square dancing is going to be there with her for a long, long time to come.
That's great, because so many of the callers' kids just seem to either shy away from it altogether or pick it up a little bit and never do anything with it. So that sounds surprising to me.
Yeah, but I honestly think that my 2 girls is going to be dancing for a long time, because that's been part of their life ever since they were just little. So
that's neat, yeah.
Yeah.
How did you get involved in square dancing yourself?
My mom and dad started dancing. I was probably, I want to say, 11. And they started to dance, and then they would go to camping, square dance camping outings. And I'm like, what's wrong with this picture? How comes I'm the only one sitting on the sideline here and not knowing how to square dance? And as the years progressed, the club, of course, that they were dancing with did not allow kids into their club. Now, this was back in the early 70s.
Mm-hmm.
So, in that in mind, by the time I got to be 14, there was another couple that had a daughter that wanted to take square dance lessons. So they made an exception to let her and I take lessons that year that we both turned 14. The thing of it was, there was a teenage club only about 6 miles from where this club was. And it was a club that the parents had to be involved in, and, you know, to make so the kids could dance in it and so forth. So we were the first kids. Janie Ravick was her name. And her and I started dancing at the age of 14. And then it wasn't too much longer after that, I took the interest of calling. Hmm. Probably about maybe 2 months into our classes. Of course,
oh my
now
goodness.
You have to understand, 2 months into our classes weren't 30 weeks or 40 weeks. They were a 15 or a 20-week course.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, you know, keep in mind, of starting in September, all of a sudden here comes Christmas break. So it was probably like in February, I guess, I had already started to pick up some singing calls and started calling singing calls.
Wow.
And then the following August, I would have turned 15 in September, but that following August, I went to caller school at the age of 14.
Were your folks still dancing at that time?
Oh, yes. Yeah, my folks danced up. My mom passed away about, she died in 2000, and probably my mom was dancing before she got sick, probably up through 90, I want to say 94, 93. And then my dad was dancing probably up through 2003, I guess, 2004. But he no longer
really
danced because of health issues. Yeah, so I was actually blessed because when I went to college school in 14, my first major festival was in Oneonta, New York, with Franny Hines and Earl Johnston. Of course, I wasn't old enough to drive. And from there, it just seemed to be mushrooming, a mushroom effect. And I was pretty blessed. By the time that I was 16, I was doing some small road trips out through Ohio, Toledo, Ohio, working with Jack May, up through Michigan, working with Dick Bear, over to Lansing, working with Dave Crissy. And I was old enough to drive, or I didn't have my driver's license at the time, so my mom and dad had to tote me around for many years. And even after the fact being is after I got my driver's license at 17, my mom and dad still was a big part of my square dance calling in my life. I mean, they traveled everywhere with me. And it got to a point where dad's work was, you know, taking him away for a while from home. And so mom and I would go out. By the time I was 18, 19, my mom and I would go out and be doing 2 weeks, 3 weeks on the road calling square dances. So, and that was all through the South and the Midwest. And so, been pretty blessed. And my senior year, I flew out to California to do a festival in my senior year.
Wow.
So, things kind of took like a wildfire, and I'm really blessed. I'm excited that I have got to see square dancing when square dancing halls were full.
Mm-hmm.
I feel sorry for the folks that's starting to call now that will never have that opportunity. So if I was to be taken away from square dancing today or tomorrow, I would feel sad about that. But at the same token, I'd be happy that I was part of the square dancing scene when it was plentiful and classes were big. You know, the biggest class I ever taught was 8 squares. And our Tuesday night dances, as well as Dale can tell you, in our Monday night dances, we used to have 12, 13 squares.
Yep.
Wow.
In our area here in the Johnstown, Altoona area.
Mm-hmm.
My first club was in 1975. That was in 75 or 70. 75, latter 75, 76.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my first club. And our Tuesday nights that we danced in Evansburg would be 14, 15 squares.
Mm-hmm.
And a Saturday night dance with somebody like Ken Bauer or Gloria Roth that was traveling through, it was never heard of not to have less than 35 squares. Those days are past, so but
yeah.
They're just memories, and I'm glad that I was part of those memories.
Did you actually go out and buy a turntable and speakers as a young person, or could you borrow from someone?
My mom and dad actually bought me a Nukem.
Mm-hmm.
A Nukem turntable that had all the tubes in them, Mm-hmm. And they were just about as heavy could be, with the two fold-up box speakers that my dad made stands for them. And that was my first calling equipment. I think back then the Newcombs went like for $300, maybe $400 tops. And that was my first turntable. Matter of fact, you know, back then everybody had handles on the CB. My CB handle is Newcomb. That was my first turntable. And then, of course, Clinton turntables came along, and I had to have the updated modern version of a turntable. So I ended up with a little blue box with a monitor and a turntable. And then from the Clinton and into the Hilton then.
Sure.
So.
So you talked about people that you called with. Did you have mentors when you started out? Did you have people that gave you pointers and helped you out?
The area caller that was living here at the time, he now lives in Alabama, Ozark, Alabama, actually, I think he lives, was Bruce Williamson. Bruce Williamson was our club caller, and I tell everybody this today, that the reason I'm doing what I'm doing is because of Bruce. Bruce spent endless amount of hours working me with choreography. And I'll say this, that I've said 100 times, I can't thank him enough, because like I said, if it wasn't for him, I wouldn't be in the position that I am in today. So I thank Bruce for that. Yeah, so he was one of the guys I looked up at. And of course, there were the other guys I looked up at. You know, I looked up at Bauer and Jerry Haig and Frank Lane and Earl Johnston and Al Brundage. And that list of pioneers, and John Jones, I mean, that list goes on. Johnny Lee Clare, oh my God, Burl Maine. That goes on for, it's endless. I respected those guys, what they've done for the business. They're the reason that I'm walking the path that I'm walking today, as well as all the other callers that have started when I did. I mean, this is the path that they made for us. And we like to think that we're keeping that path going. The sad thing about it is there's not too many people following in our footsteps to keep that path open.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And we'll talk about that a little bit later.
Sure, absolutely.
Now, one of the things, I think a story you told me when we first started out, and I should probably come clean here. When I was in college, I was about a half an hour from Tommy, and I had a local guy who helped me as well. But I used to go to Tommy's dances in the basement of, what was the name of that church? The Round.
Holy Name Church in Evansburg.
Yeah, Holy Name Church, and we would dance, and we became friends. So there's a bit of a history. A bit of a history here, just to come clean. But you told me how you were taught to sing, or how you were taught to support your singing. You remember what you told me?
So I'll let you refresh my mind, and then I'll take it off of that.
You told me that you had a singing coach, and it had something to do with a stack of books.
Oh yes, the singing coach was just really having a rough time getting me in the direction I needed to go, breathing wise. So what they did was is laid me on the ground and stacked me probably about 50 books on top of my, well, it seems like 50 books. It might not have been that many, but it was to get the diaphragm from being lazy. Of doing that, it has helped me with my breathing. And I've had the opportunity many times to stack books on top of guys that call their souls. Especially because of the diaphragm being the laziest muscles in one of the laziest muscles in our body. So as far as singing goes itself they would never let me join the school choir because of I wasn't good enough, which I find that kind of funny, actually.
Yeah.
But it didn't come easy for me, even though that I was always singing and so forth like that. But when I realized that I had things to get done, that's when it became a job for me. So I made it a point that if I wanted to do this, this is what I needed to do. Sometimes it bothers me that the guys out there just don't want to work because you have to work at everything you do, whether it's your breathing or your pronunciation or your diction. So if it comes easy for those guys, then more power to them, but they can't get lazy about it. That was my problem. I was lazy about it until someone basically showed me what I needed to do and how I needed to do it. Matter of fact, Bobby Pointer from Chicago, he'll tell you the story about me laying books on top of him when he was having trouble breathing. And that has always come back to mind when Bobby's working his diaphragm and so forth. He remembers those books. Of course, when I put books on top of him, I sat on top of the books.
So, Tom, what's your current schedule like? Can you tell us about how many weekends or festivals you do?
Yeah, I'm out. I'm out Monday, Wednesdays, and Thursdays here at my home.
Mm.
I got a little plus group in a little town called Patton. Actually, that is the club that I started to dance at back in 73.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm calling for that little group. And then Wednesday night here in my hometown of Chester Springs, I have a little group. And then Thursday, I share a handy capable group with Corbin Geis. Now, Corbin is the cartoonist that does the back of the American Square Dance magazines.
Mm-hmm.
So him and I share a handy capable group as well as a DVD group. When I'm in town, I will do the DVD. When I'm out of town, he will do the DVD. So that's my week, Monday through Thursday. Then I'm going on the weekends. Last weekend I was in Dufuniac Springs, Florida, to do the Northwest Federation's Roundup. And then 2 weeks prior to that, I was in Lakeland, Florida, doing the Florida Callers Association's Fall Clinic for newer callers. This week coming up, I have a dance at State College, and then we start a caller school in the Poconos Sunday through Thursday. And then the following weekend is a fly-in at York for the D.C. Lama Squares out of the D.C. area. And then Harvest Moon in New Jersey, working with Lee and Steve Cotton, John Marshall, Tim Mariner, Ron Libby, and myself. And then once Thanksgiving comes, it's just basically a little dance that's here and there because the holidays are important to me. So, but I do stay busy. I probably do close to 30 weekends a year.
Sounded like
weekends.
More than that to me.
But I'm on the road quite a bit.
Yeah, I would say so. Are you a cool dad, though, when you're home? Are you cool?
I am a cool dad. My girls and I have a pretty good relationship. Matter of fact, my oldest daughter doesn't even call me dad. She calls me Bud. But they do a lot of picking. I do a lot of picking back. I think I'm a great dad. I'm in the process of buying a car for my oldest daughter.
Oh, you're a really cool dad.
Yeah, so, but, you know, she has to earn it. But, yeah, I'm a strict dad. But I like to think at the end of the day they're gonna respect that when it's all said and done.
Hmm.
I'm sure, yeah.
But we do cool stuff.
You had mentioned your work with Handy Capable. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
I had the opportunity many, many, many years ago, and actually we kind of backpedaled a little bit. I was invited to do a one-night, back then they were called one-night stands. I don't like one-night stands. I like party dances. And so I was invited to do this party dance, not knowing what the clientele would be. And I get to the dance, and the first couple to come in the door had a boy who was Down syndrome. And it didn't faze me one bit until the third couple, the fourth couple, the tenth couple, now the 20th couple all come in with kids who are having needs. And I was just floored because I never had the opportunity to work with anybody that had Down syndrome or autism. So it was a great learning experience for me, for the fact being as it got me to ask more questions when I took party dances.
Mm-hmm.
I knew more about the people that I was going to be working for. In this case, I did not know. That led on to having a handicapable group in Evansburg probably for 17 years.
Mm.
And then it just kind of dispersed a little bit. We lost our hall. And we call them kids, but they're not kids. They got older. We lost some of them. Some of them passed away. Some of them moved out because they were living in different group homes and so forth. So I set probably 2 years with not having a handicapable group. And then Corbin Geis, his real name is Corey Geishauser, but we call him Corbin. He called me up and asked me if I'd be interested in helping out with starting up a handicapable group. So my first group was called, the club I called for initially, the plus group, or the club group, was called the Mountaintop Squares. The handicapable group was called the Mountain View Squares. Not the Mountain View Squares. The Hilltop Squares. Corey's group is called the Hakuna Matatas.
Hmm.
Which means no worries.
Yeah.
And if all shows up on our Thursday night, we could have a size 6 squares.
Wow.
And it's just so much fun to call for them. We have a list that we follow. We do singing calls with them. We do circle dances with them. We do a theme dance once a month with them. Like this month, next Thursday, will be red, white, and blue because of Veterans Day. Halloween dance, they did a railroad theme, hobos and so forth. We did a Disney theme. So we're always doing something. And then we'll do dangle badges, a night of dangle badges. We'll, for instance, they wrap this up in toilet paper and they got their mummy badge. They dance without shoes, so they got their barefoot badge. Glow sticks, so they got their glow worm badge. So we're constantly doing something. They're so much fun. And like I said, the Hakuna Matata is exactly that. It's no worries. They come in there, and they have a blast. And I mean, you're guaranteed if it doesn't bring a smile to your face, then there's something wrong, because just to watch these kids and to execute calls and to see their smile on their face and sing along with the songs that we do for them is just a joy. And we have their sisters or their brothers or their aunts or their mothers or dads will come in and help us. Angel, as well as some of our square dancers from our second group, our DVD group, will come in as well and help Angel with their first group. So it's all free. Corey and I, we don't charge anything. Our pay is their smiles.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
Do your dancers at that group have some calls in their repertoire, or do you kind of teach it as a first nighter every time you go?
You're talking about the handicapable group?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Yeah, no, they remember from 1 week to the next week. The thing that makes it challenging for us is if we get new clients to come in.
That's what I was going to ask.
That has never danced. What we do is we let them watch the first tip, and then we get them up, and then we work. We don't spend a whole lot of time. We make sure they get into the stronger, so to speak, handicapable dancers as well as Angels. And within, it's amazing. Within a week or 2 weeks, you'd never know that they were just newbies a couple of weeks back.
Mm-hmm.
They are a lot more smarter than what people give them credit for. Now, this is amazing. We have a lot of gold medalists with the Special Olympics in our group. We have quite a few that has their black belt in karate.
Wow.
Wow.
And they're incredible. To watch them do some of the moves And I'm thinking, watching these people, just really who is the handy capable person here?
Yeah.
You know, because I sure in hell couldn't do what they do when it comes to their splits. And, I mean, we have one of the boys that, I mean, he gets into his stance and bam, he's down on the floor in a split in no time. And I'm looking for the aspirin just to take away my pain. You know, that's incredible.
Wow.
These people are smart. And if we was to take a month off in the summertime because they have other activities, swimming, horseback riding, and things like that, and we come right back, we don't have to start all over again. It's like they never left.
Besides working with that group, you had mentioned some collar schools. Can you tell us a little bit about what you've done with that?
Yeah, I had the opportunity probably in 1980. I want to go 80. I'll say 85. I got a phone call from Earl Johnston about doing their collar school, teaching their collar school in Stanton, Virginia. Now, for those who don't know Earl Johnston and Al Brundage, they're the ones that started the collar school in Massachusetts in many, many, many years back. And so I had the opportunity to be on their teaching staff in the mid-80s for 2 years. And I think since that time to date, there has been 2 years combined throughout all those years that I have not taught a collar school.
Mm-hmm.
The collar school that we'll be teaching next week, Betsy Gatta and I are owners of the collar school. It's called the Pocono Collar School. And it's held in Harmony, Pennsylvania, which is in the Poconos, not too far from the home of the legend John Collenfaller, or John Kay, as you might, some people may call him.
Yep.
And we only take 15 at our school, and because we like to give more personal one-on-one. So we're looking at this year around, I think we got 10 callers coming in for the school, which is perfect. And this year's staff, of course, is myself and Betsy Gatta and Barry Clasper out of Canada.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. I know Barry.
Yeah.
That's great.
But they're long weeks. They start Sunday around 1:30, and we go to noon on Thursday.
Wow.
So it's a lot of work. Yeah. A lot of work.
Besides the handicapable and the caller schools, I understand you also go into the local schools, high schools, middle schools, whatnot. Can you talk a little bit about your involvement there?
Absolutely. I've been involved now 11 years at the Penn Camarilla High School. Now, Penn Camarilla High School is the school that I graduated back in 1976. And I went in. That was just a fluke how I got started back 11 years ago. The principal at the time was a member of a quartet called the Vicksburg Quartet out of the Roaring Springs, Martinsburg area in central Pennsylvania. And he was the principal. And I just happened, now pay attention to this, I happened just to go into McDonald's for a cup of coffee, wink, wink. And who walks in? But this principal. So he came over and sat down with me at the table. And the ironic thing about the whole thing is that he had a recording studio. So I did a lot of my square dance recordings at his studio. So we sat there and talked, and I said, you know, I'd really like to get into, you know, the high school to do square dancing. And he said, you know, it'd be really nice is if you could come up and because I told him I was working with handicapable and all that at the time. And he said, why don't you come up and talk to one of the teachers and maybe we can get you to work with some of the handicapable students at the high school. And I said, yeah, when you want to do this? He said, as soon as we're done here, we'll go up and talk. So, the next day, I was doing to some circles and some stars and some do-si-dos for their special needs kids there at the high school. And it was part of, it was a free period for the gym teachers. So, of course, they come in and watched. And the first thing I knew is that the phys ed teacher said, hey, we'd really like for you to do some square dancing in the phys ed for the gym. And I said, absolutely. So the rest is history. At the high school, we have 9th through 12th. I do go in and do the underclass of 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th. And what's nice about that is that when we first started, we started right off cold turkey, and it seemed like it took forever to get the kids to where they need to be. Well, now with me going into the middle school, I can teach the Allemands, the stars, the do-si-dos, the circles, the weave, the ring, the right and left grand, the grand square, and by the time they get into the 9th grade, they've already had, so to speak, the very basics. So that makes my job a hell of a lot easier at the high school working with these kids.
Mm-hmm.
So there's not a time that I can't go into any of the small towns in that part of the county. That'd be the Cressing, Litz, and Lily area. We're down to the mall in Altoona that if I don't see kids from, if I see kids from the high school, I say to myself, that's cool. These kids are basically a square dancer at this certain level, which is everything through Ferris wheel. So the question is, I know that you're going to ask me, is do we see any of those kids coming through lessons? And the answer is no.
Mm-hmm.
What we have seen over the years is parents coming through lessons. Because their kids went home and told about their experience of square dancing. Some of the parents took interest in it, and they've taken lessons, and they're still dancing with us today.
Great.
The thing of it is with the kids is that they have a good experience because I don't take dancers in with me to show them how to do it or not to do it the right way.
Mm-hmm.
They don't get the square dancing outfit shoved down their throat, so to speak.
Right.
I teach them a little bit of history about square dancing, but most of my music that I use is all alternative stuff that they can relate to at their age. And
mm-hmm.
And I thank my two daughters for that because my two daughters helped me with music and we sat and we listened to it in the radio or on iTunes. Do you think this would be a good square dance? And my two kids helped me in that respect. So when I go into the school, I'm doing songs that they're familiar with. So
yeah.
Their experience with square dancing is completely different than adults coming to a party dance. Because
mm-hmm.
they're going to see dancers in the frillies and the bells and whistles. These kids don't see that. So they don't get to see that part of history, or that part of square dancing, so to speak.
Mm.
So the seeds are being planted. The seed is watered. And we just watch it grow. Now, what has been nice about that is, over the years, I probably had maybe 6-7 of those kids has gone to their college, and for their whatever they need to do in their academic, they choose to do square dancing. They have called me to come to their college and teach square dancing.
Nice. That's
so
great.
I have traveled to Slippery Rock. I have traveled to Pittsburgh. I have traveled to Huntington, to St. Francis University, which is located in Loretto, the town that I grew up in. Wherever they did their student teaching, they would bring me in to the school to, call for their kids that were in second, third, fourth grade. So
you've really made an impression on them, haven't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, so that seed is there.
Yeah.
I know some guys that have gone into the schools And they said they're not having very good success. And I'm like, well, you know, get rid of the bolo.
Yeah.
When I go to school to teach, I look like I listen to what the dress code is for the school, and I follow that to a T like all the other teachers do. If people wouldn't see me in the phys ed room, they would think that I was a teacher somewhere else through that school.
Good. How many sessions would you have with them each school year? Would you go one time, or would it be for like 10 weeks or something?
No, there is a, of course, you know, each semester is 90 days. These kids have, is it 90 days or 45 days?
45 days would be 9 weeks, so it's probably...
9 weeks. Okay, 9 weeks.
Yeah.
So 45 days.
Uh-huh.
They have to go to they have to do phys ed every day for the 45 days.
Oh, okay.
Now, they have block classes,
mm-hmm.
which means that their classes, I think, are like 86 minutes or 84 minutes long.
Mm-hmm.
So they only have 4 periods a day. One of those periods is phys ed. Within those 45 days, I go in 5 days, a Monday through Friday, and I do 5 days straight for each of the marking periods.
Wow.
Okay.
So, and we go about 80 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And you can do a lot in 80 minutes with kids.
Yep.
Now, when you're working with the kids, do you have them, do you do tips? Or do you run like 40 minutes, take a break in 40 minutes, or how do you handle that?
No, we teach them. When we're teaching, we put the singing calls to the side.
That's the end of the first part of our interview with Tom Miller.
I found it really interesting that unlike most square dance callers, he started calling full-time right out of high school.
Mm-hmm.
And his two daughters square dance now, and I know a lot of square dance callers, kids kind of shy away from anything having to do with that activity.
Yeah, I liked when he said that a lot of people won't know this, but I actually help out at a funeral home.
That's kind of the opposite persona of the square dance caller I was talking about before.
It is, but maybe creates a nice balance in his life.
Yeah, yeah.
And the handicapable work that he's doing, I have a lot of admiration for him. And knowing his personality, I've not seen him interact with the handicapable group, but my guess is that he would absolutely love them and they would absolutely love him.
Yeah, that's so great. And when he said that he didn't do it for any remuneration at all, except that his only pay was their smiles, I thought, wow, that's even more special.
Yep. And then the calling in the local schools, I like what he was talking about, you know, getting involved in the local schools at early age up through, you know, high school. And then
high school, right? Yeah.
How he gets hired again by the people who he taught to come in and work with them when they move on to college and whatnot.
Yeah, and he does it in a big way. It's not just an hour or two. He goes in several times during the semester, so he might go in every couple weeks. So
mm-hmm.
I think that's great to give the kids a real taste for it.
Tune in next week for part two of our interview with Tom Miller. So, Barb, what do you have coming up this weekend?
I have a very exciting square dance weekend coming up. It's in town, so I don't have to travel. And our Importers Square Dance Club is having Lynette Bellini call for us, so we've got some out-of-town friends coming in, and I think it's going to be a good time. And you?
I am attending, as a dancer, a local weekend put on by the D.C. Lambda Squares on Saturday. And on Sunday, my mom and sister and my two daughters and friends will be coming by to have Thanksgiving dinner, since I will be in Chicago over Thanksgiving. So,
nothing wrong with having two Thanksgiving dinners. I'm for that.
Nothing that a new belt 2 inches larger won't solve. So a big thanks to our guest, Tom Miller.
This is Barb Jarvis from Wheeling, Illinois. Goodbye, Dale. Have a good week, everyone.
And this is Dale Hodge from Columbia, Maryland. Ciao, Barb. Happy dancing. See you all on the dance floor. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.